The facts are pretty succinct. He appeared at a pretrial hearing on August 14th and signed an agreed order for a continuance. In that document, it's Exhibit 37, the court has it, clerk's papers. He was required to appear at a status hearing the following November 12th. He failed to do that, was contacted by his attorney the same day. Long story short, he arrived at court about 2 hours late. It kicked the matter over for the next day and quashed the warrant. The state had to prove, as the court knows, for bail jumping, that he knowingly did not appear, to be more precise, that he was aware of the hearing and failed to show up. At trial, he testified that he was ostensibly legally blind and that when he would go to court, what he would do is just sign documents that his attorney would hand him. And he had no idea regarding the November 12th hearing. The state, in closing, I think it's pertinent to note, it was on page 270 of the Court of Proceedings, in referencing Exhibit 37, which was the agreed order setting forth the status hearing, made the statements twice, first in the first argument saying that he had a conference with the judge and his counsel and signed the document. In rebuttal, the prosecutor returns to the same argument, saying that meaning Mr. Barrett, had a conversation with counsel and the court, and that that happens every time. The claim on appeal is that ineffectively represented. The reason for that is his conviction was far from a certainty. And without that evidence, the counsel had objected, and the jury did not have the evidence or the statement by the prosecutor that Mr. Barron had, in fact, discussed the matter with the court and counsel, I think that substantially affected the verdict in this case. And for that reason, they think it's ineffective. Counsel, it was objectionable. If counsel had objected, there's a possibility the result in this case would have been different. Succinctly stated, that is the argument. I have nothing to add to what I'll call a bone club argument, the second argument. And unless the court has questions, I'll defer to the prosecutor.
Any questions? Thank you. You'll have 7 minutes available to you for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, counsel, I would request the court's permission to remain seated because it's easier for us
That's
to use the
fine.
Microphone here.
Your opponent remains seated. We'll certainly give you the same opportunity.
The prosecutor's closing argument was not objectionable, and therefore it was not ineffective assistance of counsel for his attorney to fail to object to it. And I don't really have a lot to add to what I put in my brief. There is testimony by Jack Jones that on each occasion where a person comes before the judge, there is a discussion, and in particular about the dates that the person is supposed to appear. And the defendant himself testified that he had had a conversation with the judge. Now, the fact that the jury may not have believed that he was so sight challenged that he could not read his court dates does not make his counsel ineffective. The evidence was there. The prosecutor was permitted to argue the evidence, and the jury clearly didn't believe. On rebuttal, the deputy testified that Mr. Barrett took his business card, looked at it, and then asked him to pronounce his name. He appeared to read it. And business cards are typically pretty small print. So really, this was a credibility issue. The jury didn't believe it. But there is sufficient evidence in the record for the prosecutor to have made that argument. because that argument wasn't made. Because the argument was made, it's not ineffective assistance of counsel for his attorney to fail to object. Regarding the closed courtroom issue, the state again argues that the courtroom was never closed. Obviously, this Love case from the Supreme Court is pretty much the last word that we have on that. In that case, court found that taking challenges for cause to the jury venire at sidebar, even if not done in such a way that the spectators could hear what the parties were saying, is not a courtroom closure. And as Love pointed out, and Love's not the only case, you first ask if the public trial right attaches, which it does, and if it does, was the courtroom closed? Now, the defendant has the burden of proving both of those points. Now, the state's not claiming that that the public trial right does not attach. But we are arguing that the courtroom was never closed. There was a case came out later out of Division II, State versus Effinger, of course, which was very similar to the case that you are considering, and also found that taking challenges for cause at sidebar is not a courtroom closure. Now, Mr. Barrett's argument is primarily that if there is no contemporaneous recording for a court reporter or, say, a digital recording, then that is a courtroom closure. And there is absolutely no authority for that.
Both Love and Doesn't State v. Anderson control that? In Anderson, as I understand it, there wasn't any contemporaneous recording of the sidebar, but the trial court judge gave an oral summary immediately following the sidebar.
I'm sorry, that's could not hear that. Let me see if I can get the volume up.
Doesn't the Court of Appeals Division II's decision on remand in State v. Anderson control this issue in this case? There, the trial court judge did not have a contemporaneous recording of the sidebar, but immediately after the sidebar gave an oral summary that was recorded and available.
Well, and I would say not, because in Effinger's case, there wasn't even that. There was merely the recording on the forms that the court fills in for the jury seating, jury challenges. So they're both Division II cases, and the state argues that Effinger would control. There might very well be reasons why the court would say it's important that there be a contemporaneous recording or that the spectators will be here, but that's not a courtroom closure. You can have a violation of the fair trial, right, without it being a courtroom closure. And so the state is asking this court to find and rule that there was not a courtroom closure, therefore no courtroom violation. And Barrett is not arguing any other basis for reversal. And unless the court has further questions, I will cede the rest of my time.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
One thing on the, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
One thing on the state makes the argument that there was a conversation in the courtroom where Barrett admitted to having a conversation with the judge. That is true, but it was never in specific reference to the agreed document, the agreed order, if you will, signed on August 14th, setting the status conference hearing.
Could one
in fact, he commented that there was some type of conversation and that the judge told him where to sign the document. If we look at Exhibit 37, there's even an X marked at the bottom where he is to sign. There's nothing in the record that shows that he was aware of the Harry Kirby prosecutor's argument. With that, I have nothing to add to argument if the court has any additional questions.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your participating through the video conferencing, and we will be in recess.
Thank you.
Now, do we hang this up? Do they not? I better not do anything. Can't update. Okay, that was fast.
Yeah.
We're done before we're supposed to start. I was afraid to start.